Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro, and this is the program which is being broadcast the day after Yom Kippur. I generally record this introductory few minutes of the program after I have completed the other segments so that I can sum up what I'm going to say as the introduction. This time I'm going to make a slight change because of the circumstances. A true Jewish hero, Ari Fold, was murdered at the beginning of the week by a 16-year-old Arab terrorist who stabbed him in the back. Ari managed to get off a few shots at the terrorist before he collapsed. According to the newspapers this morning, the family of this terrorist will get 1,400 Israeli shekels a month for the next 3 years from the Palestinian Authority as part of its policy of funding what they call martyrs for the Palestinian cause, according to the information supplied by the Palestinian Authority itself. The Palestinian Authority terror reward project for 2017 and 2018 amounted to 1.2 billion Israeli shekels each year, according to the finance ministry's website. This is exactly why there will be no peace with the Palestinians for the foreseeable future, and all the talk of a two-state solution is rubbish. Some form of modus vivendi will have to be established, and it's incumbent upon the government of Israel to figure out how to deal with the large Arab population. But since the Arabs are going to pay for terrorism, then there is no chance of any kind of peace in the foreseeable future. These are, unfortunately, the hard facts of life, whether we like them or not. Being Jewish in every generation has always entailed difficulties, which actually change in every generation. So we'll have to put our best minds together to resolve this problem. We cannot solve it. We will have to resolve it, which means we have to figure out how to live with it. And these are the hard facts of life, unfortunately, but we have to live with reality. I'll say more about this in the upcoming segments. Thanks for listening. I'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to start with a short but necessary comment. Ari Fold, a colleague on this station and a well-known activist for Jewish rights in the Holy Land, was murdered at the Gush Etzion Junction on Sunday. Of course, our condolences to his family. He was stabbed in the back by a 16-year-old Arab. The victim of that Arab could have been any Jew. That Arab left home with the intention of killing a Jew, any Jew who he could stick a knife into. This murder proves one thing beyond the shadow of a doubt, one thing that's really important. And that is that there is no peace that can be achieved with the Palestinians, whose education from nursery is that Jews have no right to a country, and indeed, Jews have no right to life. It's very important to realize, as a 16-year-old kid, since the Oslo Agreement in the early 90s, any kid who started nursery in that year, the age of three, and all those who followed him have been brainwashed to believe and to be active to see that Jews have no rights to life. And they hear preachers in the mosque every Friday who preach the same thing. Jews have no right to a country nor to life. The very fact that a 16-year-old would leave his home to go and find a Jew, any Jew, to murder by stabbing him in the back is the ultimate proof that there can be no peace and no two-state solution for the foreseeable future. And when I say the foreseeable future, I'm talking for endlessly. Now, incidentally, one final thought along these lines, that those people who brought us the Oslo Agreement and brought terrorists back into our land really have no right to show their faces publicly. People who were involved in the so-called Oslo process still write in the newspapers. They still get interviewed on a television and radio, and they still write books when they were so wrong. And by the way, I'm not just talking about Israelis. I'm talking, for example, there's a book called The Missing Piece by Dennis Ross. Dennis Ross is a big expert on the Middle East. Read his book. Take it out of the library, for heaven's sake. Don't spend money to buy it. And you'll see how wrong he was about everything, including he admits to keeping Pollard in jail for at least 20 more years because he wanted to use him for a bargaining tool. Anyway, but that's a story unto itself. The bottom line is there's no peace for the foreseeable future with people whose 16-year-olds go out with the intention of killing a Jew. Now, moving on to the subject of non-governmental organizations, they're called NGOs. These are supposedly humanitarian groups claiming only to promote human rights. However, some of these bodies are known to be actively involved in discrediting Israel in every possible way. One of the first moves was the so-called BDS movement. That's the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement. And by the way, anti-Semitism is protean. That means it takes many shapes. Now it also takes many acronyms and initials. For example, today, anti-Semitism and Jew hatred goes under several names, under initials like NGO, which means non-governmental organization, and BDS, which stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, also hides behind the term human rights, and I'll speak about that in a moment. Often working behind the scenes and totally unaccountable for their political actions, NGOs are the recipients of major subsidies from many governments, particularly in the European Union. For example, and by church groups, for example, back in September of 2001, there was a UN conference on what they called racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. Great name. It was held in Durban, South Africa, and one of the organizations that attended was the World Council of Churches, which sounds very legitimate. That World Council of Churches led the demand to officially denounce Israel for what it labeled as systematic perpetration of racist crimes, including war crimes, acts of genocide, and ethnic cleansing. What they use as a basis for that accusation, I don't know, because Israel is certainly not guilty of any of those things. By the way, another lesser-known ploy is what's called lawfare, L-A-W-F-A-R-E. It is the use of the courts to hamper Israeli involvement with companies outside of Israel. They use legalese, legal language, terms such as war crimes, apartheid, massacres, and other labels to promote anti-Israel views. It's also employed to aid in the organization of violent protests to provoke Israelis into having to defend themselves. They support violent protests that the Israeli army has to put down in order to protect our people. When compared to other global areas of warfare, funding for these NGOs involved in the Arab-Israeli hostilities is unprecedented. An organization called NGO Monitor revealed that the preponderance of funds from the European Union for these NGOs was given either to Palestinian groups or to Israel, groups in Israel, Palestinian groups, or left-wing groups in Israel, which little went to other areas of concern around the world. Now, the question is, was it sent to provide humanitarian aid in Israel or to fund riots and influence local political issues in favor of the enemies of the Jewish state? And the answer is, of course, the latter. This lack of transparency when it comes to the donors and where the money goes and the extent of this aid is actually in contravention of rudimentary democratic values. Some governments that support NGOs have alleged that such information are in fact state secrets, and disclosure of the information where the money goes and how much goes to what organizations to reveal these things, according to these governments, will be a danger to public security. Now, the Israeli Knesset realized this, and they voted a transparency law back in 2011 relating to NGOs. It compels the organizations to submit reports each quarter for donations that exceed $5,500. The information provided reveals critical details about the entities involved in the Arab-Israeli conflict. Now, this move by the Israeli Knesset should actually set a standard for other nations in order that they demand more information regarding these NGOs who are quite reticent about where their money goes. One might think that following the Holocaust, the world will unite to halt anti-Semitic attacks wherever they might be found. Unfortunately, really unfortunately, this is not so. A recent poll indicates that as many as one in every four European citizens, in other words, 25% of the European citizenry, harbors some form of Jew hatred. That figure alone should reveal that not enough is being done to change attitudes and combat the menace, this menace that is essentially as old as the Jews themselves. These human rights groups show clear hypocrisy. They're only concerned with the human rights of those who oppose the existence of Israel. Their use of the phrase human rights is only a cover for their true motives, unfortunately. And by the way, these boycott groups boycott products made in Judea and Samaria, what they call the West Bank. But the primary workforce in Judea and Samaria is local Arab workers who get standard Israeli salaries, much more than Arabs get in their own home areas, and much more than Arabs can generally get who pass into Israel every day to work. So these boycott groups essentially are boycotting the livelihood of Arabs. So they really don't know what they're talking about, but they're a danger, and they really have to be monitored in order to curtail their activities. And I think it's an important point. I'll probably come back to it again another time, because the people have to be reminded of the so-called human rights groups who are interested in everything except human rights. They're interested in destroying the state of Israel. I'll be back after the break.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I'm Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. At the beginning of the previous segment of the program, I mentioned that a 17-year-old Arab terrorist stabbed a Jew in the back and murdered him. The Jew's name was Ari Fuld. He's a 45-year-old immigrant from the United States. He lived in Gush Etzion in the town of Eilat. And he was stabbed in the back by this terrorist. And I said, here's a kid who got up in the morning and he went out to kill a Jew. And that is why, with this kind of education and this kind of preaching in the mosque every Friday, the idea of having a two-state solution or having any kind of solution with the Arabs is simply not feasible at all, and it's pointless to talk about it. Now, after I did that segment of the program, I was reading the newspaper and I came across a couple of news reports that further reinforced what I said, and I want to share it with the listeners, because truth of the matter is, until you read these things, you really can't believe that there are people like this. Let me tell you what the report said. It said that the report was in the Jerusalem Post, and it was by one of their correspondents, who happens to be an Arab. At any rate, he said that Palestinian terrorist groups, including Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, praised the murder of Ari Fuld, saying it was a natural response to Zionist crimes against the Palestinians. The official news agency of the Palestinian Authority, this is the one that is headed by the fellow who's now in the 11th year of his four-year term, and the one with whom we are supposed to make a two-state solution, the Palestinian Authority's official news agency reported on the attack in an item under the following headline: "The occupation injures a teenager south of Bethlehem." The report identified this kid. His name's not important. According to the report, the kid was injured under the pretext that he attempted to carry out a stabbing attack. And, of course, Hamas quickly reacted to the terrorist attack and called it a heroic stabbing operation. Senior Hamas official said, and I quote, you have to hear this stuff to believe it. He said, "We welcome this heroic operation, affirmed that harming Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line. The terrorist attack came in response to what Israel is planning to do in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Our Palestinian people will not remain silent towards the ongoing violations against Al-Aqsa." Al-Aqsa happens to be a mosque, by the way, which is on the Temple Mount. Nobody's harming it. There are Jewish Jews who visit the Temple Mount under their control by the Israeli police. The Palestinians claim that the Jewish visits are aimed at altering the status quo of the holy sites. Interesting, by the way, In the Six-Day War, 50 years ago, Israel captured the Temple Mount, and immediately Moshe Dayan, who was the at that time the Minister of Defense, he handed over the keys to the Temple Mount to the Muslim authorities, and now they control it. Now they're claiming that Jews are trying to violate the what they call the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So these visits are really almost every day they're condemned by the Palestinian Authority, and they accuse the Jews of defiling the Islamic compound. As a matter of fact, the Palestinian Authority controlled media regularly described the visits of Jews, a few Jews at a time, describes it as violent invasions by Jewish extremists. The Hamas spokesman also praised the terrorist attack, and he said, and the spokesman said that the attack proved that the intifada against Israel was continuing. The second largest terror group in the Gaza Strip is called the Islamic Jihad. They also issued a statement praising this heroic operation against Zionist terrorism. And it said that the murder of a Jew is a natural response to Zionist crimes against our people, our lands, and our holy sites. Another Gaza-based terrorist group called the Popular Resistance Committee, they have all kind of terrorist groups, said in a statement the attack was a form of popular resistance against a Zionist American conspiracy against the Palestinians. So these guys are including, they're referring to Donald Trump's plan for peace in the Middle East. So it's a collusion between the Americans and the Zionists to do bad things to the Arabs. And of course, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine hailed the attack as a natural response to Israeli crimes. So here you have a kid gets up in the morning, takes a knife, finds a Jew, any Jew would cross his path, stabs him in the back and murders him. This murderer is now a hero in the eyes of all the Palestinian groups. And these are the groups, including the Palestinian Authority, with which or with whom we're supposed to be making peace. So you see, there's absolutely no chance whatsoever of any kind of peace taking place with these people. Now, that brings us to another subject. More or less, we slide into this other subject, something that I wanted to talk about at length, but I think time doesn't permit, but I just want to touch upon it. I'm referring to the fact that we just finished 25 years, a quarter century, since the Oslo Accords that were supposed to bring peace to this area and bring about the establishment of a Palestinian state that will live in peace next to the state of Israel. So the Oslo Accords, which were signed on September 13th, 25 years ago, pretty much were dead on arrival, because the Arabs never had any intention whatsoever to maintain the accord. Now, the truth of the matter is that those accords were essentially established on what something that came before. Back in 1979, there was a Israel-Egypt peace treaty, which talked about mandated Palestine, saying that there is some legitimate right of the Palestinian people and they should be essentially have their legitimate rights. Why Israel ever agreed to that, I'll never know, because the Arabs have absolutely no legitimate rights in this land. This is a Jewish land, and it's been that way for more than 3,000 years. As a matter of fact, the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian organizations didn't exist till 1964, when they came up with the Palestinian Treaty, or it was essentially their constitution. So, with back in those days, for some reason, it was felt a terrible mistake on the part of the Israeli diplomacy. You know, If I have to look back over Jewish history and see some of the worst things that happened in Jewish history since 2,000 years ago, the destruction of the temple and the loss of Jewish sovereignty, you can look at a lot of things, including, for example, the expulsion from Spain in 1492 and what happened in Portugal in 1498 and, of course, the Holocaust. But what was different between them and the Oslo Accords is that all these things were inflicted upon the Jews. The Jews did not inflict these things upon themselves. The Oslo Accords, which is one of the greatest tragedies in Jewish history, was inflicted upon the Jewish people by a Jewish government. That makes it so terrible, really. What happened was, The Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin and their people, they self-denied what was obvious to all, that the PLO could never accept a Jewish state. And moreover, they would never officially grant the same equal right to the Jews. As a matter of fact, there's a very interesting thing going now that nobody calls attention to. The Arabs claim that they want to have a state. Publicly, they claim, when they talk in Arabic, they say they want to get rid of the Jewish state. But when they talk to Western diplomats, they say they want to have a state next to the Jewish state. But there could be no Jews in it. It's very interesting. Any Jewish settlement over the Green Line in the area which the Arabs claim diplomatically that belongs to them, there could be no Jews. Which strikes me as rather odd. For example, there's almost a million Arabs living in the state of Israel. In the Negev and in the Galilee, there are Arabs, many of whom are Israeli citizens who vote. Can you imagine what kind of peace there would be between the United States and Canada if, for example, no Americans were allowed to live in Canada? Why they should say Jewish settlement is an obstacle to peace is itself indicative of the nature of the kind of peace that the Arabs want. Nobody seems to call attention to that. Anyhow, so what you have that is a phony two-state solution that some people still pay honor to, I guess that's, I can't think of another word, but Israel has given up on the two-state solution. But here we are stuck with a big Arab population. We have to figure what to do. That is indeed a problem. But the solution to that problem is not a two-state solution, one in which the Jews are not allowed to live. So a lot of people over the years still call the Palestinians, who actually didn't exist until they created the Palestinian covenant in 1964. Before that, the Palestinians who lived here were considered residents, Arabs who lived in southern Syria. I'll say more about this after the break, but I just want to put this stuff on the table. I'll be right back.
John O'Bundor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few more words about anti-Semitism. It's a subject that doesn't seem to go away, but as I said, it's protean. It takes different forms. And I mentioned a lot of these forms come under acronyms and initials like BDS, which means boycott, divest, and sanctions. Now, it turns out there's another one that I wasn't aware of until I read a few weeks ago, something called the 3D test. It's a new one. So you have all these initials. The 3D test is a definition of anti-Semitism, which actually was created, its definition created by Natan Sharansky when he was the head of Jewish Agency. He wrote a book and he described something called the New Anti-Semitism. He wrote this book about 14 or 15 years ago. And the 3 Ds is called delegitimization of Israel. That's the first D. The second is demonization of Israel. And the third is subjecting Israel to another D, which is double standards. So you have delegitimization of Israel, demonization of Israel, and subjecting Israel to different standards than you do to other groups. So Sharansky wrote, demonization is when Israel's actions are blown out of all proportion, and comparisons are made, for example, between Israelis and Nazis, and between Palestinian refugee camps and Auschwitz. By the way, a lot of this comparison is made because people who hear it are ignorant of the real history of what Auschwitz really was. It's like I had a meeting in a university in California. Actually, it was a debate. And I said that I used the expression that Auschwitz was a death camp. And somebody disagreed with me and said, no, Auschwitz was a concentration camp. I said, no, a concentration camp is a camp where you concentrate people. As a matter of fact, I remember I used that word about what was done during the Second World War to the Japanese citizens of the United States, particularly those who lived on the West Coast. They were forced by the American government into concentration camps in Oregon and Washington because their only crime was that they looked like the enemy. This wasn't done to Germans in the United States. But at any point, the point was I used the word concentration camp, which is not the same as a camp where you're going to murder people like Auschwitz, which is a death camp. And now you have people comparing the way Israel treats the Palestinians and the way the Nazis treated the Jews. So and interestingly enough, for example, this BDS campaign doesn't call for the boycott and divestment from Israel because it wants peace. It calls for a boycott and divestment from Israel because they want a one-state solution in which BDS supporters envisage one day there will be a state and the Zionist enterprise will be dead. By the way, the Anti-Defamation League, which tracks anti-Semitism in the United States, has recorded a worrisome increase in anti-Israel activity on the college campuses in recent years, something that never happened in the past. And much of this is led by groups like Students for the Justice of Palestine, which has grown in 8 years from being on 80 campuses to having a presence today on more than 200 campuses. In other words, this pro-Palestine, anti-Israel, active group on 200 campuses in the United States. So obviously criticism of Israel is legitimate. The problem is when that criticism is motivated not by honest criticism, something the state does, but it's motivated by hate and the desire to see the Jewish state destroyed. What's happened is over perhaps the last 10 years, forms of criticism of Israel, they've turned from legitimate acts of protest to anti-Semitic attacks. For example, Israeli speakers are heckled on campuses in the United States. Israeli products are boycotted, and when students wearing Stars of David or shirts with Israeli flags are attacked, this is all part of a campaign to undermine the legitimacy of the state of Israel. In other words, it's not legitimate to exist. Now, the truth of the matter is that these universities will need to start taking responsibility for what happens on their campuses. Campuses or universities are supposed to be places where you can say what you think in a legitimate way. But now, if you even show any kind of pro-Israel, I don't want to use the word bias, pro-Israel feeling or thinking or speaking, you might well be attacked. So this is a major responsibility. It means that the universities are simply not doing, performing their function that universities are supposed to be. Universities are supposed to be places where you can express your mind, and people develop that way when they hear differences of opinion. One of the worst places, by the way, is a school that I went to myself for graduate work at Rutgers University. It involved an anti-Israel organization which had equated Israel and the Nazis and then proceeded to demand an admission fee to an event that was free, but if it believed students who wanted to go to this event, if they believed they were Jewish, they demanded an admission fee. And what happened was students reported this to the university administration, but nothing was done. This is several years ago. So maybe college administrators have to undergo training to be able to identify acts of anti-Semitism that until now have been disguised as legitimate political protests. Students certainly have a right to protest, and they certainly have a right to free speech, but they do not have the right to endanger other students or to discriminate against them because of their religion or their political beliefs. This is happening now on the campuses of the United States, and one of the worst is Rutgers. It wasn't my alma mater. I went there for a year in graduate school. As a matter of fact, and this interests me particularly, not only because it's a landmark case, but because I myself went to Rutgers, the Department of Education, under the Trump administration, is reopening a complaint made in 2011 against the Rutgers University because of alleged bias against Jewish students. And the government office set up relaunch an investigation that was closed under the Obama administration 4 years ago. The department said it would examine reports of discrimination on campus against Jewish people as an ethnic group, and for the first time define what it counts as anti-Semitism. So it turned out that the New York-based Zionist Organization of America had turned to the Department of Education and said, please reopen this case. For example, calling Israel racist was listed under denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination, according to the American law. Another example of anti-Semitism, according to the law, is applying double standards by requiring of Israel a behavior not expected or demand of any other democratic nation. So this is now a definition of anti-Semitism, which is used by the American State Department, which is really, really a fantastic thing, especially under the Obama administration when all of this was denied and nothing happened. But the Zionist Organization of America took advantage of the fact that there's a new administration, decided to see what it can do, and sure enough, the Department of Education under Trump has reopened the case. By the way, I pretty much close with this, since we're talking about anti-Semitism on a campus. You got to remember, the campus is where the future leaders of America are growing up and being educated, so anti-Semitism can have terrible ramifications. According to a Pew Research Center poll back in 2016, they found that 27% of millennials sympathize more with Palestinians, which used to be 9% back in 2006. However, the millennials' support for Israel has declined from 51% to 43%. It turns out that African Americans and Latinos are supporting the Palestinian rights movements, according to Pew. At the same time, the BDS movement has grown outside the campuses, including several historic Protestant church denominations, that manage multi-million dollar investment funds. So, as I said, anti-Semitism on the campus is certainly a bad thing in and of itself, and also because that is where the next generation's leaders are being trained. So it is a very, very serious problem. So anti-Semitism, as somebody defined it years ago, as the measles of humanity. It simply won't go away. So I hate to end this first program this year on this note, but let's face the facts. At any rate, I wish everybody a good year. Stay healthy. And God willing, I'll be back next week, hopefully with more cheerful news. Take care of yourselves till then.
This is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Garris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.